Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month, we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at zmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at zmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning. Happy New Year to you all. So today I was going to tell a story, and it's from The Gateless Gate. So this book, this is the hardback version though. And it's called Think Good Nor Evil. So, case 23. Can you pass me those glasses from over there? I don't have my reading glasses on, so. Okay, the case. The sixth ancestor was once pursued by Monk Myo as far as Mount Dayu. The ancestor, seeing Myo coming, laid the robe and bowl on a rock and said, "This robe represents the faith. How can it be competed for by force? I will allow you to take it away." Myo tried to lift it, but it was immovable as a mountain. Terrified and trembling with awe, he said, "I came for the Dharma, not the robe. I beg you, lay brother, please reveal it to me." The ancestor said, "At the very moment you were chasing after me, without thinking good or evil, what was the primal or original face of Monk Myo?" In that instant, Myo suddenly attained deep realization, and his whole body was covered with sweat. In tears, he bowed and said, "Besides the secret words and the secret meaning you have just revealed to me, is there anything else deeper yet?" The ancestor said, "What I have now preached to you is no secret at all. If you reflect on your own true face, that the secret will be found within yourself." Myo said, "Though I have been at Obi with the other monks, I have never realized what my true self is. Now, thanks to your instruction, I know it is like a person who drinks water and knows for himself whether it is cold or warm. Now you, lay brother, you are my master." The ancestor said, "If that is the way you feel, let us both have Obi for our master. Be mindful and hold fast to what you have realized." Mumon's commentary. It should be said of the sixth ancestor that his actions sprang from urgent circumstances. His kindness was that of a grandmother who peels a fresh lychee, removes the seed, and puts it in your mouth, so all you have to do is swallow it. The verse, it can't be described, it can't be pictured, it can't be sufficiently praised. Stop trying to grasp it with your head. There is nowhere to hide the primal face. Even when the world is destroyed, it is indestructible. So, you know, that's a story. I don't know if it's encouraging to you. It depends on what position you really take in this, you know, in this whole drama. The story, if you go a little bit further back, is that the sixth ancestor, or Daiken Enno, was a fairly poor person. His father died when he was young, and he was the main breadwinner. So he lived in poverty with his mother for most of his childhood. In this process, I guess he was faced with deep suffering, not just because of the loss of his father, but for what it took to stay alive and also to support his mother too. So this question about the nature of life really came up for him. Just to illustrate, you know, Maizumi Roshi once was asking everybody, what is the core of Buddhism? And people were saying, you know, become enlightened, to become more compassionate. And he was just going, no, as usual. And then he goes, no, it's about ending suffering. You know, I'm bringing this up because that should never really be forgotten in terms of our own life. If there's suffering there, just go straight there, you know, see what it is. And then suffering becomes a mechanism for change. The sixth ancestor did that in terms of his own life. And apparently once when he dropped off the wood for some people in town, he heard this monk chanting, dwelling nowhere raise the mind. And so apparently that just really awakened him to the nature of being. So he asked the monk that was chanting it, he said, well, you know, where's that from? And he said, that's from the Diamond Sutra. He goes, well, is there anybody that teaches that kind of thing now? And he said, yeah, there's a teacher called Obai who lives further north. So, you know, I'm sure that he would teach you if he went. So then he had to spend a lot of his time getting it so that friends would look after his mother while he was gone. He didn't abandon that that particular responsibility. It should always be remembered that he really included his parents in this, or his parent. And then he went off to see Obai, and then apparently he had an interview with Obai, and Obai said to him, don't you know that you southern barbarians don't have Buddha nature? Why are you coming here? And he goes, well, the you know, Buddha nature isn't dependent on north or south, you know, so why would I worry about that? You know, so then apparently Obai very gruffly says, okay, go off to the rice drying shed and then work there. And so apparently he worked there for about 8 months, you know. I think he was being very kind to him, to tell you the truth. Was fairly straightforward. At least he was undercover. So you know, it is interesting, and obviously these things occur. You know, when I came to UCLA, I was assigned to Genpo Roshi, and the first thing he said to me was in Dogsan, he said, don't you know the English don't have Buddha nature? And so I said, you know, who needs that? who needs Buddha nature? You know, being precocious and about in my early 20s, you know. So these things continue. The stories continue in various ways, and natural responses arise out of circumstances. And so then we get to the point where then the sixth ancestor, the fifth ancestor, so Obai, knows that he hasn't got long for this world, and so he wants to make sure that the Dharma is continued for future generations, as most good teachers really do. And so he basically says, okay, come to the Dogsan room if you have something to say. You know, if you're shy, just post it on the corridor, just outside. So he does that, and then the head monk comes out, and he posts a poem. The head monk is called Jinshu. He says, the body is the Bodhi tree. The mind is like the stand of a clear mirror. Wipe it clean from time to time and never let the dust and rubbish adhere to it. I think some of the meter has been lost in translation from Chinese to American here. So then the sixth ancestor looks at this and he goes, you know, I don't really think that this is a very good poem. And so he decides to do a poem of his own. And so he comes out with this. He says, "The Bodhi is intrinsically no tree, nor has the clear mirror any stand. There is not one thing from the beginning. Where can the dust and rubbish adhere at all?" So I think we should probably write another one that has better rhyme than that. But these are two views, and it is kind of interesting because the sixth ancestor basically is the root teacher to both the Soto and Rinzai school. And at that time in China, they were very interested in pedigree, so where you came from, who your family was, etc. The Indians previously really weren't. They really didn't care who your lineage was. So that's basically when it got to the sixth ancestor and afterwards, is that they basically compiled the lineage chart that we have today. And then what they tried to do then was link it with the sixth ancestor because he had such a good reputation. And they say, even in our lineage, they say that Seigen Gyoshi was possibly a creation. He was a bridge between Sekito Kisen and the sixth ancestor. It's fairly clear through the Rinzai school, through sixth ancestor Nangaku Eijo, Basso, etc., down to Rinzai. So does this really matter? It does if your society really demands that. I mean, nowadays, the being members of organizations is getting far more litigious now. Litigious or something like that. And you've got to follow far more restrictive rules to be part of these organizations. If you've got a free mind, it doesn't really matter. It's not a matter about following somebody else's regulations. It's how much this is written in your heart and how you act from that place. Now, so we go back to this interaction between Jinshu and the six ancestors poetically. Now, both of these are really good masters, and it just so happens that Jinshu happened to do poems very much like the six ancestors, but here they're trying to prove a point. These guys who are not of the sudden school of realization are no good, and the people that are of this sudden school of realization are the best in that way. In life, maybe not quite so clear. You know, people say certain things on certain days, they say certain things on other days. And these things are important to us as human beings. Do we filter them? Do those things really sound true to me as a human being? Am I going to use that in terms of my forward movement through life, if I can put it that way? So anyway, the fifth ancestor recognizes the depth that the sixth ancestor has, and so he calls him to his room and he questions him, and he sees that the sixth ancestor really has a depth of realization. And so he says, "Okay, I'm going to give you the robe and bowl. Basically, my bowl, my robe, and I, these are symbols that you are a successor, and you're going to continue with this. But I give you several pieces of advice. The first piece of advice is that when you leave here, leave very quickly and leave tonight, because people are going to be pissed off. Because they all want the robe and bowl. They want this transmission. They want to continue this thing. The second thing is don't teach for 10 years. Because apparently the sixth ancestor was, you know, he was like in his late teens, early 20s. And in Chinese society at that time, and to a certain degree in our societies, they don't take much note of young people, you know. I remember with my Izumi Roshi, he would take me to these people who were pretty famous, and he would say, Tenshin looks young, but really he's 40. They would say those things, you know. No, I'm way past that, so I don't need to worry about it. But there was that thing about trust in youth. I don't really have that kind of thing with me. Is that as long as those people really put themselves into the practice and it can be seen they have that talent, then there's no problem whatsoever in that way. But in our society, quite often you'll see that many young people aren't given that respect for, say, insight or for whatever it is they do. They've really got to fight for it in one way or another. So the sixth ancestor, he's fairly, you know, humble as a person. And he takes those things, he takes on the words of the fifth ancestor, and he hightails out of there, you know, goes across the river, gets a good lead on everybody else. But unfortunately, on one level, he's got this monk Mio. Now, monk Mio is actually General Mio of the Chinese army. And apparently General Mio is very good at tactics. He's very good at tracking, and he tracks him down. And I'm pretty sure that General Mio must have been a pretty terrifying prospect for him. They've got a military man who's advanced through the ranks. He doesn't have an awful lot of fear. And he's facing him, and he goes, you know, basically, young man, you have stolen this, you know, this robe and bowl. I want it. I'm going to take this back. And the sixth ancestor, you know, like any good teenager, is going to go, yeah, take it. You know, no problem, whatever. You know, take it. I mean, he cuts out that whole battling thing. Yeah, take it. That's not what the transmission is, you know. I came into this world with nothing, and I will leave this world with nothing. So have it. It's all yours. And then Monk Mio, and I've got to really appreciate this general, is going, his tactics and his strategy are much better than mine. You know, it's a, okay, I didn't come for that. You know, really is... You know, what is it in this transmission? And that is a really good question. It's as good a question today as it was, you know, say, I was going to say 10,000 years ago, but we have nothing written from that point. So we'll say 1,200 years ago, you know. What is this transmission? So immediately, in this case, and you know, you can be thinking about this or just internalizing that, what's given, what's taken, etc. He goes, right now, what is the original or primal face of Monk Mio? Yeah, what is your original face, basically? And then you can take it up from the basic koan question, what is your original face before your parents were born. Well, that's kind of interesting. Once I gave a talk on this case, and this guy publicly answered it. So just right there in the talk, he answered it. And so I kept him working on it for another 3 months to make sure, you know, in that way. Some people instinctively are not affected by their thinking mind. They can just cut through that immediately and just express these things. So these things are happening today. Don't think that this is just from 1,200 years ago. Those things throughout the generations have come down to us today in that way. And anyone that can, you know, can think is great. And at the same time, anyone that can put that one on one side and instinctively trust their own being, then even better, you have both. You'll never lose thinking. You'll never lose that ability to work things out. I remember Maizumi Roshi was once joking about Tetsugan Roshi. He's going, Tetsugan is like weeds. You cut them down and they just come back up again, you know, over and over. And he was being very, you know, very complimentary to him in an offhanded way. Because, you know, Tetsugan is very creative, very much on the spot in that way. And again, it's just like this living practice is true for us today as it was, again, those 1,200 years ago. So at that point, as Monk Myo realizes something, it is instant, it is immediate. It's not about this robe and the bowl that has been given, and it's not a thing that you fight for. Is it something that you realize you are this? You are this robe and bowl. You are the transmission in yourself. Now, why did he break into a sweat? You know, I mean, obviously I'm saying it rhetorically right now because I don't want to get into the answer thing and switching over the Zoom stuff. Why did he go into a sweat? You know, okay, suppose you are realized. Play the game of being realized. Now you're the one who's responsible. You're the one who's responsible. No other time, no other place. Somebody asks you a question, you got to answer. You know, he was in a sweat. And then he realized something. What did he realize? He realized just that. What's nice is that then he gives the credit to the sixth ancestor. And the sixth ancestor being, you know, again, a better tactician than Monk Myo or General Myo, he goes, nah, let's, you know, let Obai be our teacher. He puts it back on him. And he's following his teacher. He's basically following his teacher's directive. No, we'll wait for 10 years. We'll wait until I get the maturity of working in daily life in various ways. So apparently he went off to some city. I'm not sure which one. And for 10 years he practiced. And then at the end of those 10 years, he brought it out that he was, in fact, a successor of the fifth ancestor, Hongzhen, or Obai, as they call him here. So this appreciation really comes about through this transmission. It might be there beforehand, but there's this real deep appreciation for somebody that shows you something that you already have right from the beginning. My Zumi Roshi never gave me anything in that way. That was recognized by me as my life. But at the same time, he gave me everything too. Is that then there was that realization that everything has been here since the beginning. There is no lack or something that needs to come for the future. It was interesting during the week. I joined in on Tenkei Roshi's Zoom talk that he was doing during his session in near Groningen in Holland. And somebody asked me, he goes, well, what was your moment of realization? I said, moment? I can't freeze time like that. If it's not now, it's not realization. It's not about the past. It's not about having something. You know, it's almost like embarrassing to think about that thing that happened in the past. It is occurring now as momentary life. And if I dwell too much on past experiences, I am demeaning my basic awareness that's functioning 24/7. This original face that is constantly preaching moment by moment. I don't mean me, I. The whole world is preaching and teaching. There's no shortage there. There's no lack of teachings that are coming in. You know, that's always there. If my mind dwells on what I've attained in the past, I've lost it. You know, just if you try and work out this, then your mind goes elsewhere. That's delusion in itself. We split the light. The light of this moment in time, enlightenment, the practice of shedding light on this, then is split into something else. That can be a tool, but if we believe in it, then it's a problem. I will become this. Who says? Nobody says. You know, this is one's own illusion that is being created. And that's the whole thing that the Buddha talks about, you know, in his first statement, I, all beings, the great earth, simultaneously attain the way. This is simultaneous, the life that we live. Then, but because of our upside down views, we failed to see it. We set up a future, we set up a past, where we were and where we're going. And that's the problem in itself. This can't really be swallowed. There's always doubt about this. If you see this without doubt, that realization can be taken forward in that respect. Now, in the Mumon's commentary goes, it should be said that the sixth ancestor, that his actions sprang from urgent circumstances. You know, he has a sense of humor. He's got a general chasing him, but he's doing things very directly in this way, which he has to, because if he doesn't, you know, his whole reputation is going to be lost because he's just a barbarian. In fact, that word "hu" in Chinese is far worse than barbarian. It's a very diminutive statement, like for another race, basically. So. He wasn't highly regarded in that way. So this is remarkable in this way. Somebody that has a very low social status suddenly ascends to a position which is of the highest order in Chinese society. I mean, the sixth ancestor really didn't need that. No matter where he was at home in his own being. And it didn't really matter who was facing him at that point. The rest of his life really pointed that out in the way that he dealt with people, how he talked with people, how he helped people in all of those ways. And, you know, you could say it. You know, here it says his kindness was like that of a grandmother who peels a fresh lychee, removes the seed and puts it in your mouth so that all you have to do is swallow it. Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely he asked him a very direct question. All he has to do is swallow it. And he did. And that's the beautiful part. Most of the time people don't swallow it. It's there, but there's just like, if I do swallow this, if I do take this in, then what? And each one of us, that's what we've really got to answer. You know, in the Soto school, there's the thing of just do it, and then in time you will be a person such as this. So you don't bring in the doubt, you don't entertain that kind of thing. You just do it until you manifest it. Because practicing doubt is what you'll do until you die. If you practice this now, then at some point it really sinks in. There is nothing else in that way. It is kind of interesting where, you know, I mean, for many of us, you know, especially if we've been parents, is that we want to give the kid so they can really take it and they can grow up and they won't have the difficulties that we had, you know, etc. Grandmother even better, because they've raised them and they can just spoil them. You know, there's no problem. But I remember Genpo Roshi once saying, he goes, I could even tell you the answer and it would do you no good. Mm-hmm. And it's true. It would spoil the person. It's like that problem is, if Zen becomes cliche, you know, just this is it, and people just rely on that, then the mind just stays there. There's nothing else that needs to be encompassed. There's no stretching of one's ability. You know, and again, that's what with the Zen tradition is, you are put in difficult circumstances so that you can grow and you can expand your sphere beyond what you think is possible along those lines. Yeah, so I mean, it's a really good story, but there is a lot in it. You know, you could say the whole of Zen practice is in it. But at the same time, a story can be really good for us rather than someone just saying, yeah, act enlightened, be enlightened, carry that enlightenment forward. You know, they give you different characters that you can enter into. And in entering into these characters, different aspects come up. And that's one of the beauties of it. You know, you could say that it's delusion, but delusion is very useful for us as human beings. And you had asked me to give a, she called it a homily. I hate the word homily. It sounds like church or something. Give me a homily for the one day Zazen Kai. And so, I sat there. Before Nick woke up, about 2 days before the Zazen Kai, and I put right in front of me now, as you see me, my iPhone in there, and then I pretended I was talking to you. So I'm not talking to anybody, but I'm talking, and I'm pretending you're there. It's delusion, but it worked okay, you know. And that's the thing, is how do you use the delusions of your life to produce something? Everything is important. I'm not saying dwell in it, but everything is important. How do you use these things to enhance, to really confirm the nature of your own life in this way? Okay, well, I've talked for about half an hour, so if you guys want to bring anything up, then please do.
Now able to unmute yourself, you'd like to use the raise hand function and ask a question. All right, Anita.
Hey, Anita. You're on. Go.
Now Terry.
Okay. Terry and Penny, then.
Morning.
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 Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. Oh, it's okay. Anita's taken over again. We lost you for a bit, so we thought you'd gone, so carry on. Then we'll go back to Terry and Penny. Go on.
All right. I'm terribly sorry. I can back out again. It's basically, I'm not quite sure.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Carry on.
All right. So this story that you're telling right at the beginning of the year is kind of spooky for me, because my entry into Zen was very precipitous, mm-hmm. which is to say, I heard about it and I thought, that's good. Why don't I do a 3-month retreat?
Yeah.
So I came to you and I was on the mountain for 3 months, and you gave me that koan, which is what is your original face.
Yeah.
And I sat with this story for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it's reminded me of how marvelous that was, because I very much resonated with this young man who was responsible for his mother, and how he had to think about her first, and how he heard this story and it lit him up, which is sort of what had happened to me. Mm-hmm. And he was following it to its source.
Yeah.
And then how he did this thing with the poem, and then how he had to flee.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had to face the general, who couldn't pick up the phone because it was, and all of that. So I sat with that for about 3 months. And so it's marvelous to hear it again.
Yeah.
I remember sitting with it. And I remember the story, which is, what is my original face?
Yeah.
And I sat with it. And of course, I had to sat with it as me. I couldn't sat with anybody else. Yeah. So of course I went, okay, and I really, it's like, I just went at it, you know, a bit like a, I don't know, dog.
Yeah, good.
Nothing very sophisticated. And of course, I went with what I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went with, okay, well, there's my mother, my grandmother, and my great-grandmother, and my great-great-grandmother, all the people I know, and then there's beyond that. Mm-hmm. And of course, I went back to the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking for the original part of what mm-hmm. made me be. And of course, it made me remember Carl Sagan, the guy who was basically saying we're all actually made of bits of stars.
Mm-hmm.
Literally. I mean, that this mm-hmm. is scientifically provable. And of course, and then I suddenly got that I'm everywhere and nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, well, gosh, in Christianity, that's God.
Yeah.
That's horribly confusing. And that's as far as I went.
Yeah. Well, keep on going. Yeah.
You got
an odyssey going there.
I do. I mean, but yeah. It's kind of like what I'm trying to tell you is that my mind exploded with this thing. And I'm so glad I was sitting every day for sort of 8 hours or whatever it was with that lack of sleep and all of that, because it allowed me to confront
yourself?
It. I mean, myself, yes, but I disappeared somewhere along the way.
Yeah, good.
I know myself to be, okay, that the me that this person here chatting at you vanished sometime way back, and what's left is just now.
Yeah, good.
And I don't know that I live now very well. I think it profoundly touched me, but in ways that I can't be sensible about. I don't think I can say anything very sensible about it. Mm-hmm. I just know. Here's what I know.
Mm-hmm.
I love that man.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I know.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, you know, I mean, just let that continue endlessly.
What choice do I have?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah. All right, Happy New Year. Thank you. Okay, Terry and Penny and then Sheila.
Okay, thank you. As I was looking at the verse, which follows the commentary, and it's pretty self-explanatory, and it reminds me of something I'd like to be able to say to somebody when they ask me about Zen, because you know, but I think I find when somebody asks me about Zen, I have to try to gauge where they're coming from.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can give them an answer that can help them, but I'm not always successful in that.
No.
But,
get used to it.
Yeah. Could you say just like, you know, like I said, I can say, yeah, I understand this, but then you go to the first sentence, it can't be described. So that's what makes it hard to talk to people, I think. Could you say a couple of words, please, about the last two lines, nowhere to hide, the primal face, and the world destroyed and indestructible? I think I get it, but I'd kind of like to hear a little bit more about those two lines.
Yeah, sometimes I make his eyes raise and blink. Sometimes I don't make his eyes raise and blink. And I'm just paraphrasing someone else's views there.
Okay. Yeah. I can anything. Anything I can destroy in this world isn't really gone.
What's that?
Even when the world is destroyed, it's indestructible. I mean, I can destroy my world, but it's not gone. It's not.
Yeah, and then just look at your own life. You know, like for myself, is this destruction's like nighttime. I go to sleep, everything disappears, and then everything comes back again in that respect. But that destroyed is always there on a momentary basis. And yet the words come out of that in that way.
In one sense, I'm destroying my past thought by being aware of this moment. But that's not gone anywhere.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and in its aspects, you know, at the same time while speaking, then people think I am something, but when I look inside, there is nothing. Both of those things are working simultaneously in terms of living.
Right.
It's where we attach things that problems begin, because we want other people to believe what we're attaching to. And that never can really work deeply, because people always see through that on one level or another.
Yeah. So if I've explained something to somebody, they think I'm a certain thing, but if I look at myself, I'm just,
yeah,
like you say, it's just not there. I'm just being,
yeah,
hit in the moment by responding or doing what seems to be the right time, place, purpose. Not always, so not that I mess up. Anyway, okay, that's good. Thank you.
Well, you know, even messing up, I hate to say the cliche, is the original face.
Right.
It can't be another way. You know, there's not two things.
No,
in that way.
Sometimes when I mess up, it's the best thing I've ever done.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Terry. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Right, Sheila, you're on.
Thank you, Roshi.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah.
It's like everything that everybody's saying kind of making me more and more confused. You used, at some point, you got to the point and you said, wow, what a responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand, because it's like Anita said, you know, what choice do I have? And Terry said, you know, even if I mess up, that's it.
Mm.
What sense do I have any responsibility? I have no choice, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the responsibility is, don't defer that responsibility to somebody else. Nobody will save you. Nobody will help you, because you're already saved. You know, that is here right from the beginning. But most people abdicate that responsibility and want something else.
Do we?
Well, you may be fine. I'm just saying, it's that I'm saying most people. I'm not saying you.
I'm just trying to see it. How I'm abdicating responsibility.
I'm not saying you are. I'm just look at it. You know, if there's another time where you will be something, or another place where you were something, that's part of that whole thing. Is that right now everything is here. That's the taking of responsibility. Nothing is to come. This is it. Period.
Yeah.
That's hard to swallow for many people.
Well, yes, it is, because, you know, I immediately, as soon as you said, oh, there's a big responsibility here, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, yeah, I've got to be something. I've got to do something. I've got to be other than this.
Yeah.
You know? It's how I was interpreting it.
But yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, it's not. It's not that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, who's up next?
Looks like we have a text question from Marie.
Uh-huh.
Marie says, how do you understand the sixth ancestor's admonition to Monk General Myo, that he should always keep in mind what he just realized? Your usual advice, as I've understood it, seems to be to set every realization or experience aside until nothing remains. These two admonitions seem to be at odds, though perhaps they are not.
No, I mean, when I say, you know, put whatever realization aside, if it's something that you hold apart from yourself, put it aside. It's a story that happened in the past. Practicing this realization is the most important thing. I don't mean the realization of something else, but this realization, whatever's happening now. Practice this. This is a core of Master Dogen Zen too. is practice realization, not some other realization from the past or the future. That which is occurring now is practiced. Anything else, other realizations are dropped off. So that's what I would say right now.
Bruce.
All right, Bruce, you're on.
Hello?
Hello.
Sorry, I got to turn this off.
Okay, can you hear me now?
I can hear you. I can see you.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. What was I going to say now? Shit. Sheila, I like your name. About the story. About the robe and the bowl. Say about that. Oh yeah, it seems like that. That's a symbol of, you know, of something that the mind wants to get. So, you know, that general is running after this kid who basically he thinks stole this stuff, which means a lot because it's a symbol of attaining this.
Yeah.
You know, so this guy actually thinks that he could, it's something, you know, that's attainable, and then also that it could be stolen.
Yeah.
And being stolen actually is useful that way. He's told, you know, where to look for his own robe and bowl or whatever.
Mm-hmm. He's probably wearing it.
Yeah. And it's really true. I know for me it's really true because it's like thinking about it, you know, can be so confusing. And then also, you know, the mind, it kind of does boggle the mind, you know. You know, that me, just me, is it. Because this is the whole me that I always wanted to change or...
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe, you know, get rid of or whatever, you know. And yet that me that, you know, I wanted to change and get rid of was something made up in the first place, really. So kind of like what Anita was saying, like looking for it and going back to the Big Bang, and now they actually have things before the Big Bang.
Yeah,
it's ending, but that's a nice way to look, because then it's like, you know, now I forgot my whole train of thought about that. Yeah. But
good story, Bruce, though.
Yeah, like this endless story. Mm-hmm. You know, but that story is you know, that story that I want to make real can never be made real because it's never real in the first place. And yet, this here is real.
Yeah. And that, you know, I mean, that's part, the biggest part of realization is all those things that were so seductive in my life about the past and how great it was, and the realizations that I had and the things that were going to happen in the future, they're so seductive and so, oh man, you know, they're great. But then after a while, it's like, there's so much here and it's alive and it's interactive. You know, can be a little scary, and it takes a little bit of time to get used to being in this place. But after a while, it's just like, this is far better than anything I can conjure up. And I don't get the demons that come with it.
Right.
And I get the strength to deal with whatever demons are here now.
Right.
Because it's not going over there to look for them, you know?
And Anita brought up a nice point about, you know, when she thought about all those things.
Yeah.
I don't want to pick on Anita, but it's always nice to see her again. I love her voice. When she said, and that, you know, that remind me of what people say about God, you know. And
then, yeah.
You know, you start thinking about that, and it's like, well, that's blasphemous, but
it's only blasphemous of our idea of what God is.
Yeah.
It's my idea of things that gets in the way, or that seemingly gets in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's it's hard because it keeps coming back over and over and over again. It's a hard thing to really penetrate through, thoroughly, except for the fact that, we are always living this right here and right now, and that's even more solid than my ideas of it, really. When it comes to it.
And the thing is, this illustrates, you're bringing up the teachings of Christianity, and there's no seam there between Christianity and Buddhism. That's heresy, but it's my truth, is that I don't see one there, is that God, Buddha, nature, they're not two things. When I became a Buddhist, I didn't convert to anything.
Right.
I was still as I am. It was just language put it in a different way. I remember as a kid, I asked my mom when I was about 4, I said, if God is in all, how come I don't see him? She couldn't answer me, but it was no different than feeling this vast and empty in the midst of functioning on a momentary basis, and it's just like when I say the one who sees through these eyes, that's something experiences this world. I can't tie it down in any way. But it's no different than God is in all things. But I can't say, well, I'm the only one. No, everybody's in that position.
Right.
And because I've had a hard time with it, I can be patient with others because they're in the same places that I'm in.
Yeah, right. That monk, or General Myo, he's going to be a very good teacher because he can tell that, have that experience of chasing,
Yeah.
You go, you don't listen to your teacher? Let me tell you my story.
Yeah.
I chased the motherfucker down and tried to kill him for it,
Yeah. Well, we don't know if he tried to kill him, I think yeah. He put, but by that time in his life, he was probably tired of killing like many soldiers,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he really—it's another illustration of putting all our effort, even if it's in the wrong way, then it shows us eventually that it's the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, it's a great story on all levels. I like what you said about his poetry too. That's funny.
Yeah. Lost in translation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a good New Year.
Happy New Year. All right, Alston, you're on.
Thank you. The part about the world destroyed and indestructible just made me, especially recently, it's sometimes when I'm sitting, sometimes at other times, the world that is destroyed is the world that's going on in my head. Suddenly, mm-hmm. It'll just collapse and drop like a curtain to the floor, and mm-hmm. The only thing that's left is my attention.
Yeah, good.
Which is the thing that seems to not change.
Mm-hmm.
It always seems to be the same.
Yeah. That's yeah, I mean, for me, is that I don't like the word "the same." It is accurate on one level, but it's always different. It always encompasses whatever state of mind is there. It's always present, latent, in that respect. I like the analogy of sleep, though, too. You sleep, it's all gone. And then again, then you appear again, and everything comes back. It's really is something. Or nothing.
Thank you.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see you sometime instead of your inscrutable hound.
Yeah, I don't have a camera on my computer, and he's a lot better looking than I am. So,
all right. Yeah. Well, that's a matter of opinion.
I want to see you. I'll see you over there as soon as we can do that.
Yeah, good. Yeah, looking forward to it.
Thanks.
All right, thanks, Alston. All right, Eli Kubo.
Good morning, Oshie.
Hey.
I don't have really much to say, but I just really like this general in the story.
Yeah, me
because
too.
Most writings about realization or enlightenment, they seem such like pleasurable, wonderful experiences. And
yeah,
reaction to just start sweating. I just find that awesome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've also got like when let's see, I'm trying to think of her name. Who's my Dharma sister, the elder one?
Nioyu?
No. Keep on going. Joko, right. When Joko had her realization, she felt very disappointed. So that's one story. And then there's also Master Ganto. So, you know, he was awakened, and he was one of the most brilliant masters through history. And a bunch of bandits came through. And the story goes, you know, they say, "Monk, what are you still doing here?" And he goes, "Don't you realize I could cut your head off in one blow?" And he goes, "Yeah, you could." And he goes, "You know, bandit, don't you know I could die with one stroke of your sword?" So, I mean, and the bandit cut his head off, you know, and apparently his scream could be heard for 30 miles. So it's not, you know, don't think that these things, it's just wonderful all the time. I mean, one of the problems is we tend to take a lot of the stories of, you know, feeling good, but there's some way, you know, you really feel for the people. That's the thing, is simply because you can be one with, you also feel for the people who are around you. And if they're going through a hard time, you go through that with them, just like with a family member or whatever. It shouldn't be another way, because it's that empathy that is really developed. You see yourself in all the things that are around you too.
Yeah.
So there's as much so-called good as there is bad there. It's not that things should always, you know, look good. Sometimes you can't reach people. Sometimes what you do doesn't work. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing is, you know, you've got to swallow yourself whole. The good and the bad, everything that's there. And then be able to get on with your life and live.
I know I'm one of the things I'm dealing with right now is this kind of a voice in the back of my head constantly saying, why don't these people just do what I know?
I have that voice. I have that voice too. Yeah. Join the human race. Yeah.
It's just really kind of tough to let that one go.
Yeah, and, you know, and look at the age difference between me and you. If I let it go, no.
That's not encouraging.
Yeah, it's not encouraging.
I start sweating.
No. Yeah, but you've got a chance of being better than me, and that's what I want. Right, Eli. Yeah, so you're a traveling man right now, eh?
Yeah.
In the greater vehicle. Okay. Yeah. Right. All right, Deanne, you're on. Too much hilarity tension. Okay,
it's
stop
true.
It.
You know, I have to say something about this, how we or I are always dividing time up as if those divisions are real, too. Like past, this moment, the future. I don't buy it.
Yeah, good.
You know, I mean, that's such a
okay.
Linear thing.
Okay, now try and set up an appointment.
No, yeah. I'm not saying that delusions aren't useful tools.
Exactly. Now that's what I'm saying. You know, I mean,
yeah, that's a delusion that's a useful tool.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's not. I really don't think that's how I experience reality.
Good.
Part of our faculties as a human, mm-hmm. we have memory, which is about the past.
Yeah.
And we have imagination, which is about the future. Mm-hmm. And does that mean if when we're having memories that we're dwelling in the past, or if we're imagining we're dwelling in the future, or how can we can't do either of those things mm-hmm. because we're only existing right in this moment, mm-hmm. but so are the memories and the imagination. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying we are experiencing past, present, and future, which are just words on three different divisions, which in itself is a delusion. You know, say there's a million divisions of time or, mm-hmm. you know, thousands of kalpas or whatever of time.
Yeah.
And we're experiencing them all in this moment. But we have to have a lot of delusions in place to be able to function in a day-to-day mm-hmm. basis in a culture and within relationships.
Now, are you fine with that?
Well, I don't know that I have a choice. It's how I experience reality now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I'm saying is like in term, there's people that need method, and most of us. I mean, I needed method, and I still need method to a certain degree in various things that I do. And part of that method, so that I don't mix them all up. And I can really see the present very clearly. That's the core of Zazen, is put those things on one side. And then in my daily life, all of these come through, and then I learn in the midst of those things. But then there's also confusion where I start to futurize, or I get fear over certain things, and that's where it's important to, again, put those things on one side, come back to this moment in time. And like you say, it is a delusion on one level, but it leads to being able to encompass all of those aspects.
Oh, yes. I'm not saying
I have to say that because there's many people in many different places.
Yeah.
So if I take it the way that you were talking about it, that is true. But at the same time, is if the, you can't separate those things, then there will be a lot of confusion in there.
Yes, it's a useful tool.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have to talk about the past as the past.
Yeah.
The future.
Yeah.
Knowing that we're always just in this present moment. But
yeah.
The past and future are in this present moment as well.
Sorry, I didn't get that last sentence.
The past and the future are in this present moment.
Oh, yeah.
And
there's those things, you know, is that I have to think about the future to plan now. And that's no problem. But then I know the tendency of my mind is to get wrapped up in that and have it keep on.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? It's not like, okay, here's this straight line in the past.
Yeah, no.
It hasn't happened. They are both mm-hmm. present and informing us and in motion. They're not dead.
Yeah.
The past isn't dead. The future isn't some ethereal unknown.
No, it's now. Yeah, I've got it. I'm just talking in terms of what we call, like, you know, basic practice. And I don't want to lose sight of that part, because I know the tendencies that my mind will do as a human being, which creates suffering. And I'm talking more on those lines. That's the thing that I started with at the end of, at the beginning of this talk. You know, I wanted to do that. There's certain things that we do with our minds that create suffering.
Yes, but see, I think that the suffering is like pretending as if the past is some sort of fixed entity in time, or the future is some fixed entity in time. And yes, there's got to be a structure and a method.
Yeah.
To have us in this
exactly. Yeah.
With our breathing, just as it is. And it's all present.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, those are all like highfalutin words, just kind of trying to point to something that feels real, but it's very difficult to express.
Mm. Yeah, and you should know where those paths lead. Basically, that's part of the process of practice, so that we don't end up just dwelling there or there. But it's you can go anywhere within this, rather than being imprisoned by the past and the future.
Yeah,
in now.
The more I sit zazen, mm-hmm. I can notice more quickly now when I am going to one of those other areas.
Yeah.
As if that is the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can notice that.
Yeah.
And bring myself back to a point where they can all sit here together.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the only way I can describe mm-hmm. it in words.
Yeah, good. Yeah, and again, you know, just remember the basics too, so that those are medicines for addiction to one or the other, which we tend to have as human beings.
Yeah. Thank you, Roshi.
Thank you.